जय राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन बाला गिरधारे हरी गोपी जन बाला गिरधारे हरी Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parvraj Gachara Sotir Siddha Shri Shimri Savayan Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai ISKCON Founder Chari Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Shri Krishna Janmashtami Ki Jai Holy Appearance Day of Shri Krishna Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai Gaur Premananda All glorious assembled devotees All glorious assembled devotees All glorious assembled devotees All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Namo Bhishmaraya Krishna Sai. Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityanamana. Namaste Saraswati Deva. Gauravani Pacharani Nirvishesha Srinivadi Kashta Jadi Sitarani. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya I'll wait till everybody's ready to begin Srimad Bhagavatam class. I thought that would work, anyway. It didn't. Okay, we'll start. We have a verse up today, but I want to have a little introduction before we get to that. That's not the right one. I must have made a mistake. Is that 8:19? Okay, my mistake. It should be Asan Varnas Trayohyasya. I gave you the wrong number, I guess. Try 9. Maybe it's 9 instead of 19. Okay, anyway, we'll get to that. Thinking about giving this Janmashtami class, I was meditating on how to properly glorify Krishna. It's a very seemingly impossible task. How in a short period of time, less than an hour, do you encapsulate everything that is there to say about Krishna, what is essential, what is important? And of course, we can never do that. It's hopeless. But at least we can try to the best of our knowledge and to the best of our realization, discuss something about Krishna that will glorify him on this day. So over the last year or so, I've been mostly reading the 10th canto pastimes of Bhagavatam, reading a lot about Krishna and his wonderful pastimes. And two amazing attributes of Krishna stood out for me. And it wasn't exactly like this just came to me. It's also described by acharyas like Srila Jiva Goswami, that we have a balance in Krishna, that we have, first of all, his supremacy as the original source of everything. He is that supreme personality of Godhead. But secondly, we have in Krishna, distinct from practically any other form or conception or idea of God, his extreme sweetness and his loving relationships with his devotees. So how do we balance? Both things are there. And how do we balance them? Of course, the great devotees balance these perfectly, but in different ways, in different aspects. So in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, we see this. We see how Krishna is glorified as in his position as the supreme, and we also see these wonderful, loving, sweet pastimes of Krishna's devotees in all the different rasas. So I turn to chapter 8, which is called Lord Krishna Shows the Universal Form Within His Mouth. Now, normally I start out a Janmasthami class with something like Bhagavad Gita, 4 chapter, reasons for, you know, Krishna's appearance like that. So with us, try something a little different. Now, in this chapter 8, there are two different pastimes, very distinct. They're completely different pastimes, but yet they are sort of tied together with a thread of some seemingly unrelated but very similar themes. One to do with Nanda Maharaj and the other with Yashoda Mata. So we begin with the name-giving ceremony performed by Garga Muni. Since it is Krishna's appearance today, this is just after Krishna's appearance. Maybe, what, a month or two is probably the, maybe 1 to 2 months, the name-giving ceremony. And this happens, of course, shortly after his birth. And in this very interesting name-giving ceremony, which had to be kept secret because they were worried about Garga Muni, of course, knows everything. He knows who Krishna is. He is afraid if he glorifies who Krishna is too much, it'll get back to Kamsa. Because Kamsa is looking for where is this boy? Where is this son, eighth son of Devaki, who was supposed to kill him? So he's right. He's out there, and he's got all his good demon friends like Putana and Trinavarta and all of them out there. So it had to be kept a little bit secretly. And so in this name-giving ceremony, Garga Muni tells Nanda Maharaj, his son is as good as Narayan. Okay? So that was interesting. Then later in the chapter, Krishna shows his universal form in the mouth of Yashoda. So I'm going to kind of discuss both of those. But we'll start with, did we find it? Which one was it? What is the number?
13.
I was only off by 6. Well, you know. Okay. My fault. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.8.13. We'll just repeat it a couple times since we're probably going to be short on time. Asanvarna Sriyosha Grinato Nuyugam Tanu Shuklo Raktas Tatapita Idanim Krishna Tam Gata Asanvarnastrayohyasya Grinito Nuyugam Tanu Shuklo Raktas Tatapita Idanim Krishna Tam Gata. A couple people could chant. A couple of Vaishnavis?
Asanvarnastrayo yasya
Thank you. Translation. Your son Krishna appears as an incarnation in every millennium. In the past, he assumed three different colors, white, red, and yellow. And now he's appeared in a blackish color. In another Dwapar Yuga, he appeared as Lord Ramachandra in the color of Shuka, a parrot. All the such incarnations have now assembled in Krishna. Purport. This isn't quite all of it because it's quite long, but Prabhupada says, partially explaining the position of Lord Krishna and partially covering the facts, Gargamuni indicated your son is a great personality and he can change the color of his body in different ages. The word Grinanta indicates that Krishna is free to make his choice. In other words, he is the supreme personality of Godhead and may therefore do whatever he desires. In Vedic literature, the different colors assumed by the personality of Godhead in different millenniums are stated, and therefore Gargamuni said, your son assumed these colors. Indirectly, he said, he is the supreme personality of Godhead. Because of Kamsa's atrocities, Gargamuni tried to avoid disclosing this fact, but he indirectly informed Nanda Maharaj that his son Krishna was the supreme personality of Godhead. It may be noted that Srila Jiva Goswami, in his book Karmasandarbha, has enunciated the purport of this verse. Srila Jiva Goswami has two commentaries, the Karmasandarbha, which is a sort of a short commentary on the entire Bhagavatam, and then he's written one, a much longer commentary, but only on the 10th canto, Lagu Vaishnava Toshini. And I read both of his purports to those, and basically he says exactly what Srila Prabhupada is saying next. In every millennium, Krishna appears in a different form, either white, red, or yellow, but this time he personally appeared in his original blackish form, and as predicted by Gargamuni, exhibited the power of Narayan, because in this form, the Supreme Personality of Godhead exhibits himself fully. His name is Sri Krishna, the All-Attractive. I'm going to skip down a little bit. A couple paragraphs. The avatars incessantly appear like incessantly flowing water. No one can count how many waves there are in flowing water. And similarly, there's no limitation of the avatars. And Krishna is the full representation of the avatars because he is the source of all avatars. Krishna is Amshi, whereas others are Amsha. Amshi is the whole, Amsha is the part. All living entities, including us, the jivas, are Amshas. Maivamsho jivaloke jivabhuta sanatana, which means, of course, the living entities in the conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. These Amshas are of different magnitude. Human beings, who are minute Amshas, and the demigods, Vishnu Tattva, and all other living beings are part of the Supreme. Nicho Nichanam Chaitanis Chaitananam. Translation I got from this, which is actually my initiation letter, Prabhupada quoted this verse, and he translated it there as, he is the prime eternal among all eternals. He is the supreme living entity of all living entities, and he alone is maintaining all life. Krishna is the full representation of all living entities, and when Krishna is present, all avatars are included in him. So we're now starting to get a pretty good idea of who Krishna is, that he is that supreme, the source of everything, the source of all avatars. And then a few verses later, concluding, Gargamuni says, in conclusion, therefore, O Nanda Maharaj, this child of yours is as good as Narayan. In his transcendental qualities, opulence, name, fame, and influence, he is exactly like Narayan. You should all raise this child very carefully and cautiously. Now, that raised a question to me. If he has all the power of God, why we worry about raising him carefully? He should be able to take care of himself pretty well as all of you. And the reason is very simple. Gargamuni doesn't want to disturb Nanda's rasa, his relationship with Krishna as his son. In other words, Nanda's feeling, this is my child, my little boy Krishna. So in other words, Gargamuni's holding back a little bit. He doesn't want to full-on say, this is the absolute true supreme personality of Godhead. You think that he's your son. No. He doesn't want to disturb that wonderful relationship between Krishna and his parents and Vatsalya Rasa. As the Acharyas often say, that knowledge of Krishna's supremacy is, quote, contrary to his bhava. Anyway, that's the way it's often phrased. Later, now, as we go on in the chapter, Mother Yashoda looks in Krishna's mouth. Why? Because the boys, including Balaram, accused him of eating dirt. And of course, Krishna immediately, says, they're liars. I never ate dirt. And but Balaram confirmed it. Some of the showed was doubtful. So she says, okay, if you have not, show me. Open your mouth. What does she see? The entire cosmic manifestation, the universal form, everything in creation. She's totally bewildered. What is going on? Am I going mad? Then she begins to understand the absolute truth of Krishna. She gets it all. She sees everything philosophically. And then she says, it's only by illusion that I'm thinking in terms of my bodily relationship, that I am Nanda Maharaj's wife and this and that, and I am the queen of all these people. These are all just designations. And she gets very, very philosophical for about one verse. And then, happily, Krishna has Yogamaya cover her again so that she will see Krishna is simply her son. Verse 44 in that chapter says, immediately forgetting Yogamaya's illusion that Krishna had shown the universal form within his mouth, Mother Yashoda took her son on her lap as before, feeling increased affection in her heart for her transcendental child. Srila Prabhupada says, Mother Yashoda regarded the vision of the... Mother Yashoda regarded the vision of the universal form as an arrangement of Yogamaya, like a dream. As one forgets everything after dream, Mother Yashoda immediately forgot the entire incident. As her natural feeling of affection increased, she decided to herself, now let this incident be forgotten. I do not mind. Here is my son. Let me kiss him. So it's interesting. Even though she had seen the entire cosmic manifestation, it says her natural maternal rasa and love was actually increased by this. So Krishna arranged, so she saw this, but yet it didn't diminish her feeling of her natural love for Krishna. How does this happen? Well, Prabhupada has given examples. As one he gives is the father, maybe a Supreme Court judge or a very important person. And when he comes home, he lets the children play with him, ride on his back. The father's enjoying playing with the children, probably a lot more than hearing legal dry arguments through the day. And so he's very much enjoying his relationship with his children. So you might ask the children, you say, do you know that your father is a Supreme Court judge? And they say, hey, yeah, that's really cool. Hey, Joy, do you know he's going to take us camping this weekend, or he's going to play with us? In other words, yeah, okay, he's a Supreme Court judge. So, you know, but what are they interested in? Their relationship with him as their loving father. Okay. Oh, and actually, Prabhupada describes this. This was in a lecture in Detroit, 1975. This is a little bit different. It's pretty much the same. Just like a big father, a high court judge, there's a story of the Prime Minister Gladstone. Somebody came to see him, and Mr. Gladstone was informed, when he was informed, he said, wait, I am busy. So he was waiting for hours. Then he became inquisitive. What is this gentleman doing? So he wanted to see within that I guess he opened the door. He saw he become a horse, taking his child on his backside, playing with him like a horse. That business he was doing, you see, this Prabhupada speaking, the Prime Minister, he's controlling the British Empire, but he is controlled by a child out of affection. That is called affection. So that's a really wonderful analogy, isn't it, to show, you know, that we can get from material examples, we can get an understanding of spiritual rasas, which are very advanced and, you know, difficult to understand. So because the paternal rasa, maternal-paternal rasa in this material world, Prabhupada said, is the closest thing to spiritual love, it becomes a good example for us to understand this. So the fullest understanding, this deepest love, these most confidential relationships are shown by the residents of Vrindavan in Krishna's eternal dham. And for them, the loving relationships and his beauty and his wonderful qualities are topmost. But first, those of us who are more neophyte, for us to advance the spiritual life, the sadhakas must know the philosophical truth. So both things must be there, and you must have a strong foundation understanding who Krishna really is almost before you can enter into the more intimate pastimes. And Prabhupada often explained, that's why we have 9 cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam to establish Krishna's position before we get into the 10th canto and even the 11th canto, at the pastimes of Krishna. Okay? So we must understand who God is, why Krishna is supreme. Srila Jiva Goswami is famous for his 6 Sandarbhas. And I decided about a month ago when I heard I was giving this class to try to read the Krishna Sandarbha. And reading the Sandarbhas is a little bit tough going, I have to admit. I'm not so intelligent. They're quite deep. But I read the Krishna Sandarbha. And the first about 80 or 100 pages of the entire book explains and elaborates on one verse of Bhagavatam. Anybody have an idea what verse that might be? Hete cham sakalapum sam krishnas tu bhagavan svayam. 1328. All of the above mentioned incarnations, they're either plenary portions or portions of the plenary portions of the Lord, but Lord Sri Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. So after all of the different incarnations, at least all the Leela avatars are mentioned in the Bhagavatam in the third chapter, then Sutta Goswami concludes with this. Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. And Jiva Goswami explains that this is what's called the Paribhasa Sutra of the Srimad Bhagavatam. A Paribhasa Sutra is an explanatory phrase or a relative statement for all the other statements in the book. It's only stated once, but it pertains to all future discussions of the topic. So anytime there's any discussion of who's God, who's supreme, it's referred to this one, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. So it's a very, very important verse. I think if you look in the Veda base, Prabhupada quotes it hundreds of times. I mean, it is the probably most important verse of the Bhagavatam. As I said, Jiva Goswami puts half of the book or a third of the book just in explaining and elaborating on how Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan, the original supreme personality of Godhead with all opulences. It's interesting, this term. I think that Bhaktisiddhanta used the term usually supreme person. I'm not quite sure. And then Prabhupada elaborated a little bit, expanded it to supreme personality of Godhead. And it's such a wonderful statement in English that we can all understand. He is the supreme. He's supreme. He is Godhead. You know, everybody has an idea at least of what God is. And personality. He's a person. So this refutes any type of impersonal understanding. So supreme personality of Godhead with all opulences, Bhagavan. In Srila Prabhupada's purport to this verse, 1328, he says, according to Srila Jiva Goswami's statement, in accordance with authoritative sources, Lord Sri Krishna is the source of all other incarnations. It is not that Lord Krishna has any source of incarnation. Sometimes people say, well, if God made this, who made God? Well, no, that's the definition of God. That's where you stop, the final causation, right? You know, you have efficient cause and final causation. Prabhupada's discussed this. You might have many, you know, down the line causes, this causes this, you have material causes, but the efficient or the final causation, that's where you stop. Who is the source of everyone? Krishna. All the symptoms of the Supreme Truth in full are present in the person of Lord Sri Krishna. And in the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord emphatically declares there is no truth greater than or equal to himself. In this stanza, the word Swayam is particularly mentioned to confirm that Lord Krishna has no source other than himself. Really, another nice verse that describes this is, of course, Brahma Samhita. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. Krishna, who is known as Govinda. That's nice, too, because it really tells you exactly who we mean, Krishna. Govinda. We mean Krishna in Vrindavan, her the coward boy. Krishna is known as Govinda, the supreme Godhead. He has an eternal, blissful, spiritual body. He is the origin of all. He has no other origin, and he is the prime cause of all causes. Another way of saying the same thing. So, what Jiva Goswami does, he first describes how all the incarnations, all the avatars, the Purusha expansions, you know, like the Vishnu forms, the Leela avatars, the Guna avatars, they're all plenary portions of Krishna. Of course, you hear this a lot, plenary. After about 48 years of hearing this term plenary portion, I finally decided to look it up and find out what it really means. It means it's a part that's empowered by the original. So we might say, sometimes diplomats are called plenary something or other. It means they're empowered. In other words, they have the power of the government. They don't have all the power of the government. They're not the whole government, but they are empowered in that task to represent the government. So that's exactly what it is. All incarnations have some of Krishna's power. They're empowered by him, but none are as complete. None of them have all the powers. No other form displays the complete qualities of Krishna. Srila Prabhupada explains this. All the incarnations, same purport, all the incarnations of the Lord, including the Lord himself, descend on the different planets of the material world and also different species of life. Think of tortoise, the boar, you know, to fulfill particular missions. Originally, the Lord is full of all opulences, all prowess, all fame, all beauty, all knowledge, and all renunciation. When they are partly manifested through the plenary portions or parts of the plenary portions, it should be noted that certain manifestations of his different powers are required for those particular functions. When in the room, small electric bulbs are displayed, it doesn't mean the electric powerhouse is limited to just those small bulbs. That same powerhouse can supply power to operate large-scale industrial dynamos with greater volts. Similarly, the incarnations of the Lord display limited powers because so much power is needed at that particular time. In fact, Krishna can even empower living entities. They're called Shaktivesh avatars that have specific limited powers functions. For instance, the four Kumaras are empowered incarnations for Jnana. They fulfill the purposes of teaching Jnana. And Narada Muni is considered a Shaktivesh to teach Bhakti. He's the incarnation of Bhakti. Okay? So, when Krishna has all powers, all qualities, in perfection, he is called Bhagavan. Krishna's Bhagavan, complete in six opulences. Srila Prabhupada explains what those are in a purport to Bhagavad Gita 2.2. Aishvaryasya samagrasya viryasya yashasya shriya jnana vairagya yaschaiva sanam bhaga itengana. That is from the Vishnu Purana. Says the Sanskrit word Bhagavan is explained by the great authority Parashramuni, the father of Vyasadeva. So this verse from Vishnu Purana comes from Parashramuni, Vyasadeva's father. The supreme personality who possesses all riches, all strength, all fame, all beauty, all knowledge, and all renunciation is called Bhagavan. There are many persons who are very rich, powerful, beautiful, famous, learned, detached, but no one can claim that he possesses all riches, all strength, etc. entirely. Only Krishna can claim this because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Krishna, in his 10th canto pastimes particularly, demonstrates these opulences in many, many ways. First is wealth. How does he demonstrate wealth? Someone say? How does he show that he has all riches? Maybe in dwarf. Someone said something about. Yes. He created the entire, right? The entire island, the whole thing, Dwarka overnight. And he has 16,108 palaces. And those palaces are described, filled with, you know, incredible, we can't even imagine. You know, even the walls are made out of valuable jewels, you know, precious stones, all these sort of things. So, I mean, he had more wealth than anyone. Strength? What are some things he did? Lifted Govardhan Hill with one finger of his left hand. Yes, Jatratma. What? You're just lifting your finger. Okay, good. Killing demons. These were considered the most powerful demons that were like, you know, they were like subduing the demigods. Easily killed them. Some of them, who was it? I think, well, maybe it was Balaram. One of them, he indifferently struck with one hand, like slapped, and this most powerful demon was killed. I mean, so he showed incredible strength. Fame? Who's the most famous person in the world? God, right?
What's that?
After 5,000 years, we are still talking.
We should talk about Krishna. Yes, very famous, right? Here he is. It's not like he's diminished. He's just, by Srila Prabhupada's, you know, mercy, everyone is getting to know about Krishna. Yeah, and if you consider Krishna just in general God, everyone in the world, in every culture, every religion, people know of him. Beauty. Well, there are countless verses that describe Krishna's beauty. This is amazing. I'm just going to read one. This is from Nectar Devotion, chapter 26. The gopis say, Krishna is the killer of the attraction of Cupid, and as such, he disturbs the patience of all newly married girls. Krishna's bodily features have become so exquisite, it is as if they were all manifesting an artistic sense of the highest sort. His dancing eyes have dimmed the brilliance of the most expert dancer, so there's no longer any comparison to the beauty of Krishna. And, you know, we can find so many statements that describe Krishna's beauty. Knowledge, Bhagavad Gita 15:15 says, I am seated in everyone's heart. From me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of Vedanta and the knower of the Vedas. So all, not that he has the most knowledge, he creates the knowledge. All the knowledge comes from him. There is no knowledge different from him, from his essence. And renunciation, obvious stories like Krishna the Ranchor, when he acts like he's leaving the battlefield, and Jarasandha says, oh, I finally won after 21 times, or whatever, you know. And Jarasandha continues to brandish that wonderful accomplishment after he's defeated over and over and over again. He just never learned. But anyway, and of course he leaves the gopis at one point in the 35th chapter, 34th, somewhere in there. No, it's earlier. 33rd chapter, when does he leave the gopis? Okay, all right. I never get my numbers right. So, as we can see, I couldn't even get the right verse on the board. Anyway, the important thing is that we remember Krishna, remember the past times the best we can. Okay, and also, Prabhupada mentions, yeah, this was in a lecture in Bombay, just see Bhagavan's renunciation. If we construct a building, we become attached to it. But Krishna has constructed the whole universe, and he does not claim it for himself. This is only one universe. There are millions of universes, and he can walk right away. And so, in fact, in the material world, he gives us credit for all this creation in the material world, which, of course, we do nothing, and Krishna did it all, but he's not attached. So there's so many ways we can understand Krishna as supreme. And continuing with Krishna Sandarbha, talks about some of the different ways that he's unique and does things that only Krishna can do. First of all, he gives liberation to the demons he kills. Now, he's really the only incarnation that gives complete liberation when he kills a demon. And the exemplar, of course, is Jaya and Vijay. They were killed by Nrsingadeva and Varaha. They were killed by Ramachandra, but they weren't liberated. They were only liberated when Krishna finally kills them. Of course, you know, they say, well, yeah, had three births. Well, it was arranged that way, that Krishna would be the third birth, that Krishna would kill them, and thus they were liberated. In fact, in the Rajasuya sacrifice in the assembly, when Shishupal finally had just committed so many offenses and insulted Krishna so much, and to prevent a huge battlefield going on, because Balaram and the Pandavas, you know, they were ready to just go after Shishupal for being so offensive, Krishna said, no, I got this. Shudarshan Chakra off of his head. Very, very easily done, didn't cause too much disturbance. And what happened, though, was amazing. Everyone saw this. His spirit soul rose up in the air out of his body and then came into the body of Krishna, right? You know, and he's like it merged with Krishna's body. Then, of course, later he's reinstated in his position in Vaikuntha as one of the doorkeepers. I don't know if it's Jaya or Vijay, one of them. So other incarnations can give liberation, of course, to their devotees. If one becomes a great devotee of Lord Ramachandra, one can certainly become liberated. But Krishna, only Krishna gives pure prema to his devotees. You know, the highest, deepest, pure love of God is given by Krishna. Now we could say, well, what about Lord Chaitanya? Okay, Lord Chaitanya is Krishna, in a sense, right? We don't see them as different. So Krishna and Lord Chaitanya give this highest prema, everyone. Also, all aspects of Krishna are eternal. That's the other thing. Some of the incarnations come for a particular time and place. You know, they have one mission to perform. Krishna's pastimes are eternal. They go on everywhere. His dham, his pastimes, his devotees, his name. Eternal. It's described, Prabhupada explained it, like the rising and setting of the sun. Krishna's pastimes, he performs pastimes, say, on this earth planet, and when those wrap up, then he immediately goes to another universe, you know, at the proper time. And those, so they go on over and over and over again. And those are just the Prakriti pastimes, those that are manifested in the material universes. And of course, his Aprakriti pastimes, which are his unmanifested, in a sense of unmanifested materially, I guess. Well, they're never material, so I don't know exactly how to explain it. But anyway, they go on eternally in Goloka Vrindavan, is what I'm trying to say. So we know that his pastimes are eternally there. His devotees are always performing these pastimes. They're always engaged in Krishna in his different rasas and loving relationships. The other thing is Krishna's holy name is identical with him, of course. We hear this many, many times. Probably when we first walked in the door, someone told us Krishna and his name are the same. I went, wow, okay. Trying to understand that. I'm still trying to understand that. But it's a wonderful meditation as we chant japa. But Krishna's names are the most powerful. It's described in the different Puranas that Krishna's name is 3 times more powerful than Rama and 1,000 times more powerful than Vishnu. Or Rama's is 1,000 times more than Vishnu, so thus Krishna's is 3,000 times more powerful than Vishnu. So there's no name that one can chant that has greater ability to liberate one, and beyond that, to bestow love of God, to bring us to our eternal relationship at lotus feet of Krishna. His planet, Goloka, is above all material and spiritual realms. There's no planet that's higher. It's at the very top in the spiritual world. He gives pleasure to his devotees through loving relationships. He has the highest and deepest level of relationships with his devotees. So when Krishna appears in the material world like he did today, some 5,000 some years ago. Anybody know how many years ago it is?
5,250.
See, it's going along. Back when we were young, we would say 5,000. Now it's getting up there, 5,250 years ago. But it was on this day, as at least, you know, according to the lunar calendar. In chapter 4, Bhagavad Gita, verse 8, Krishna describes why he comes. Tells Arjuna to deliver the pious, annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion. I myself appear millennium after millennium. Now, so he does. He kills many demons like Kamsa, Jarasandha, Shishupal. He has to rid the world of the demoniac influence of all these kings because he was requested by the demigods when they came, when the earth was overburdened. So he's doing that. He's establishing religious principles by speaking. See if you're awake. How did he reestablish religious principles? What did he speak? How about Bhagavad Gita? Okay. To Arjuna on the battlefield. And most importantly, he comes for his devotees. Srila Prabhupada said it wasn't really necessary for Krishna to kill demons. He could arrange an earthquake or anything to get rid of demons. Prabhupada said, as far as the atheists are concerned, it's not necessary for the Supreme Lord to appear to destroy them. The Lord has many agents who are quite competent to vanquish demons, but the Lord especially descends to appease his unalloyed devotees. So Lord Krishna primarily came to deliver Devaki rather than kill Kamsa, but both were performed simultaneously, right? So he came because Devaki and Vasudev had prayed to have Krishna as their son, and he came 3 times. And this was the 3rd time that he appeared. So that was his main purpose. Secondarily, he kills the demons as well. Personally. In 2726 purport, Srila Prabhupada says, certainly the Lord does not need to come here personally for such purposes as killing demons, but he actually descends to exhibit his transcendental activities in order to encourage his pure devotees who want to enjoy life by chanting the glories of the Lord. Now that's really nice. So it's not just to fulfill desires of his devotees, the current devotees, those pure devotees, you know, that he's coming for, but for all of us future devotees, because he's performing wonderful pastimes, exhibiting transcendental activities that will encourage us to continue chanting, repeating, and hearing his glories. So Krishna appears not only to engage in these pastimes for devotees, but for his own pleasure as well. He enjoys these. He enjoys his loving relationships with the devotees. So the jiva, we are always under the energy of God. And Yoga Maya, of course, assists in his loving relationships, his spiritual energy, his potency, his shakti. And the culmination of those personal loving relationships is really in Vrindavan, Vrindavan Leela. Of course, there's the Ishvara Leela, Audarya, and the Madhurya pastimes. And Bhaktisiddhanta describes this in Chaitanya Mangala right near the beginning. The Ishvara Leela, of course, is grandeur. Awe and reverence, usually Narayan, Vishnu. Adurya pastimes, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, means mercy, magnanimous, the most magnanimous pastime, wonderful pastimes he performs with Lord Chaitanya. But then the Madhurya pastimes means sweetness. Doesn't just mean Madhurya Ras, it means more generally sweetness. You know, so these are meant, these are in Vrindavan. And they are meant to captivate our hearts, okay? And of course, in the Gaudiya Sampradaya, the followers of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu generally tend to gravitate towards Vrindavan Leela, towards these pastimes. Obviously, the six Goswamis, that's what they stayed in Vrindavan. They excavated the place as a pilgrimage. They wrote extensively about Krishna in Vrindavan and Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. And we see this throughout all the literatures. And these are our acharyas. In Nectar of Instruction, Rupa Goswami says one of the six ways that are positive to advance in devotional service, one of them is follow in the footsteps of the acharyas. And the very first thing Srila Prabhupada says in the purport is, six acharyas means six Goswamis. These are acharyas, the six Goswamis. Those we follow. And they are residents of Vrindavan. They're eternal residents of Vrindavan. And of course, even in their appearance, obviously, we all know they're Nityasiddha devotees. When they appear here, they appear and they come to Vrindavan. So that's kind of our line. Why? And we are so fortunate because Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given us the highest understanding of God, given us this. We have Radha Krishna on the altar. You know, Radha, I mean, we think about, we probably, I don't know, most I do, take it for granted often. Sure, yeah, we have Radha Krishna deities, Radha Krishna is who we worship. There's nothing higher than worshiping Radha and Krishna. This is the highest worship in the universe. And we are fortunate, by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Prabhupada, to be able to be engaged in this. Okay. Now, what's the difference? The devotees in Vrindavan do not wish to be too overwhelmed with a sense of grandeur of the Lord. But too much on reverence, pure love is restricted. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I forget the verses, I was trying to look them up, I didn't have time. But there's several verses like this, particularly Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu talks about, and quotes Krishna, that if love is too much restricted by a sense of reverence, it's not as pleasing, right? So, When it is less, because often that can mean it's done more out of a sense of duty, of obligation, I have to, my gosh, this is God, you know, or I'm afraid, or I'm in awe, or I don't want to be punished, you know. In other words, those are not really attributes of pure love. So pure love happens when there is less of a sense of awe and reverence. And outside of Vrindavan, Dasya Ras tends to be more prominent. Now, of course, Dasya is there in all Rasas, because we're all servants. Radharani is a servant of Krishna. Everyone serves Krishna. So that's there. But even more than the prominence of Dasya Rasa over, say, Vatsalya, Sakya, and Madhurya, is the devotees tend to retain knowledge of Krishna's Godhead. Right? If we look at the devotees in Dwarka, even the greatest devotee, Uddhava is such an incredible devotee. I mean, Krishna only spent, 20 chapters of the entire Bhagavatam speaking, giving lessons to Uddhava. Uddhava is like as high as you can get in terms of devotees. You know, Krishna's friend, his counselor, his confidant. But he retains this knowledge that Krishna is God. And he always has that respectful attitude. And who does Uddhava think is actually the highest devotees? Who are his exemplars? The gopis. He was sent by Krishna to console the gopis, but Krishna had another reason to send Uddhava, so that Uddhava could see the mood of the gopis and learn that that was actually the highest. And Uddhava totally appreciated. He even has prayers like, may I just in a future birth just be, you know, at the dust of the lotus feet of the gopis and things like this, be grass or something in Vrindavan. So this is so much appreciated. And then when you have even his queens, the queens, who, of course, they're all expansions of the principal gopis in Vrindavan, but when they appear as queens, they also tend to retain that knowledge that Krishna's God. And so there's always that sort of little respectful, that reverence. And therefore, it's considered not as high. I mean, how can you say high or low, really? I mean, be a queen in Dwarka is, you know, pretty far up there. But it's not considered quite as wonderful, as advanced as the gopis in Vrindavan, because of that knowledge of position as a Supreme Lord. So, too much emphasis on knowledge or greatness can interfere with the free expression of love. Now, obviously we're talking about great devotees. We're talking about Nitya, you know, Siddha devotees. We're talking about advanced devotees, pure devotees. What about us? Where do we fit into this? That's what I always think. Okay, what about me? You know, not that I'm so focused on what about me, but I mean all of us, I should say. I think we can understand this, even as neophytes. When we're looking at, you look at the beauty of Radha Shyama Sundar, or Gaurini Thai, or Krishna Balaram, and you're looking at the beautiful deities, and you're looking at their decorations, and you're thinking about that peacock pastime, and how beautiful that is. You know, and so let's say you're really absorbed in that, and you think, oh, they're so nice today, the way they're dressed, the beauty, right? And your friend comes up, or someone comes up to you and says, well, you know, actually, Krishna's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he's the shelter of everything. He's just, he plays this, but yeah, he's this and that, and he's giving you Srimad Bhagavatam class, you know, and you're kind of like, wait a minute, you know, you're sort of interrupting my mood here of just appreciating Krishna's beauty. Or I was thinking yesterday, did anybody, my wife noticed this, because she notices these things, and she pointed out to me that yesterday, little Radharani was carrying an umbrella. Anybody notice that? Okay, good. You guys are better. You're alert. Why? Because there was a forecast of rain. So the pujari, very thinking, you know, think in a very personal way. This is personalism. The pujari is thinking, oh, it's going to rain today, so Radharani should have an umbrella to hold for Krishna. Now, you could come and say, well, you know, why does he need an umbrella? Krishna's the shelter of all. Why does he need the shelter of an umbrella? That's silly. And, like, you just kind of say, like, would you just kind of, like, you know, back off, or you know what I mean? You're ruining it. You're spoiling the mood. So we can understand this to some degree, right? We understand a little bit about that mood of, you know, seeing the beauty of Krishna and the beauty of the deities. And so both are there. Now, does that mean that person is so absorbed in that that they wouldn't kind of like be aware of any reality, anything greater? No, not necessarily. I mean, it's kind of an interesting... It's an interesting paradox, because even Krishna becomes covered by Yogamaya. Let's say Krishna allows himself, he asks Yogamaya to do this service, because Krishna's in control of everything. But he says, you know, I want to enjoy this pastime, and if I've orchestrated it all and directed it, and I know how it's all going to come out, what fun is it, right? So sometimes he likes to be a little surprised, and think, oh, I wonder how Purnamasi, how Yogamaya is going to figure this one out. You know, and he kind of goes along with it because it's just more enjoyable. It's to increase his happiness, his bliss, his ecstasy, and his relationship, and you know, with the devotees. So sometimes Krishna even lets himself be covered in a way. Now, how can that happen? How can Krishna be absorbed in his pastimes, you know, and at the same time, he's off creating universes and things like that, you know, and he's in the heart of every living entity. And how does Krishna, you know, listen to the prayers of some little devotee down on the earth planet named Tamohara, you know, who's saying, please, Krishna, keep me out of Maya, while he's off enjoying with the gopis? Well, it's a good question. And it's a complicated answer. And if you're really interested, there's a wonderful little book by Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur called, oh my God, what is it called? It's called Raga Vartna Chandrika. Yeah. And he has two parts to it. In the second part, he explains this question. And he says, you can't give a civil answer like, it's not that he's pretending to do these pastimes. Oh, he's just pretending to cry when Mother Yashoda, or, you know, is like going to, you know. No, he says, he's both. He's absorbed in the pastimes. He's actually enjoying and doing his pastimes. And he is also creating universes, and he's listening to your prayers. And there's only one explanation. It's called Achinta Shakti. Seriously. This is the answer. It's Krishna's Achinta Shakti. This is his power, inconceivable. The inconceivable power of the Lord that he can do all things simultaneously, which is just even more amazing. So, you know, I heard in, actually I think it was Rita Nanmaraj gave this example, this analogy that I really like, so I steal it all the time, but I do try to give attribution. He said, it's kind of like if you're watching a play, you may be watching a movie, but most of you don't, I'm sure. So you're watching a play, and you're absorbed in it, and you're really into the characters, right? And you're just like, everything else is gone. It's so exciting, it's so interesting that you're just watching it, and you're absorbed in it, you know? And then your friend comes along again, same person who's bothering you about the deities, comes up, you know, hits your elbow and says, well, you know, these are only actors. This isn't real. This is just a play. And you say, come on, you know, you're ruining everything. You know, so, yes, Do I know that it's just a play? Of course I know it's just a play. Do I know what reality is? Yes, but for that moment, I just want to be absorbed in, you know, in the enjoyment I'm having with that. So think like Krishna and the devotees are like that. You know, it's not that there's never any understanding of, you know, the greater, I don't want to say reality, because which is the greater reality? Good question. Not that there's any understanding of the supremacy. In fact, even sometimes the gopis are very philosophical, right? There are times when they start talking all types of very deep philosophy. And sometimes they understand Krishna as God. But you know what? They don't care. They really don't. I was thinking of one example. This is in the chapter, in the five chapters of the Rasa Dance, which I never remember which is which. But after Krishna comes back, after they've been separated, and he's trying to give all, and they're asking him all these clever questions, trying to trip him up. And he started giving all these sort of reasons why. And finally he actually tells him they accept it. But first he gives some other sort of, I would say, spurious reasons. You know, first he says, well, you know, it's all due to fate. It's all due to providence. People come together and they come apart. What can I do, you know? And then the next thing he says is, actually, I'm never separated from you because I'm the super soul. I'm the Antaryami. I am, you know, everything. And so the gopis, being very clever, they say they're simple village girls. They're not. They're very, you can't get any. They say, wait a minute. Don't you say this in the Bhagavatam? You know, if you're everything, if you're the super soul and you know everything, then how can you say that it's just fate or providence? How can you blame it on somebody else when you actually say you're in control? So, you know, it's like they understood that and they got that. But, you know, but they don't really care. You know, you can be God or not God. We just love you. You're just so sweet, so beautiful. You know, we're your eternal servants for all time. So it's like that with the devotees. And I was thinking because Vishwanath also talked about how knowledge of Krishna's supremacy affects the rasas. And that's like the gopis just basically don't really care. In parenthood, we heard that it actually was increased. Mother Yashoda and Nanda's, you know, love of Krishna in the Vatsalya Rasa was actually increased even after having this knowledge or seeing the universal form in their mouth. So nothing really shakes that. You know, I was just reading, actually, I just happened to read this because that's where I was reading the Bhagavatam in the 85th or 86th chapter. It's the chapter when Vasudeva asks Krishna and Balaram to retrieve their children. And Vasudeva's get very philosophical. He's speaking really nice, very deep philosophy. But it's like, it's not really so much in the mood of parenthood. And then finally he says, you are not really my sons. He says, I understand this. He says, you know, this is just sort of my illusion. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now that's true. And it's absolute and it's wonderful philosophy, but Nanda Maharaj would never say that, would he? Would Nanda Maharaj say, you're not my son? No. And that's why the Acharyas say that the highest Vatsalya Rasa is Yashoda and Nanda. Because Nanda would say, you may or may not be God, but you're my son. Or sometimes they say, isn't it wonderful that God has become my son? Right? In other words, he's still my son. He may be God, but he's my son. Or like that. Or where you remember actually back in the early chapters when Krishna appeared to Devaki, and he actually showed the forearm form, right? He said, because if I did not show you this form, you wouldn't be sure that I actually did come the third time and become your son, that I am that Supreme Person of Godhead. Nanda Yashoda wouldn't really care. You know, they just love Krishna for the beautiful, wonderful little boy that he is. So that's how we have this difference. And it's interesting, if we look at friendship, if we look at the coward boys, they don't really want to know about Krishna being God. You know, we don't want to hear that. You know, they kind of dismiss any idea, and they always say, oh, you know, it's probably an accident. We helped him hold, you know, we had the sticks. We helped him, you know, lift Govardhan Hill and all that kind of thing. But yet they still had the greatest love, respect. They served. It's not like they were familiar, but it's not that they didn't serve Krishna. They did. They made garlands for him. They dressed him. They gave him food. They had him massaged his feet. So and they can't stand being away from Krishna. But at the same time, they have this equal relationship, which Krishna enjoys. Krishna has fun doing this, you know. And even when the demigods come, and because Krishna does something wonderful, like kills a big demon, the demigods all come down and see him, and they offer artik and shower flowers. And what do the coward boys do? They start making fun of him. they start doing like imitations and caricatures of the demigods. Oh, look at Brahma. You know, like, it's like they have no respect. You know, they're like 12-year-old kids. You know how 11-year-old kids are. They have no respect for anything. You know, and so they're just like that. And Krishna is very amused by it. He doesn't say, you should be respectful of demigods. He's laughing too. You know? So anyway, it's the point is that nothing really disturbs the rasa of the wonderful intimate devotees in Vrindavan. And so in this way, we can see, and by the way, I just want to mention, like I said, it's not that Krishna's pretending to play with the coward boys or like that, you know, because he's both Bhagavans, you know, he's both you know, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he's Govinda, Gopal, simultaneously, again, by the Achinta Shakti, power of the Lord. So he is unique among all manifestations because he is Swayam Bhagavan, the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we worship him and recognize him that way and give all of our total subservience to him. He is that Supreme Person. He's within our hearts. He's guiding us at every moment. He's protecting us. He's our object of worship. At the same time, he has those special qualities of sweetness that enhance all of his loving relationships with devotees. And he has the greatest, most sweet, loving relationships. So these... are they still getting ready? Because I got a lot I could go on with, but maybe it's time to... Do I need to wrap up? Okay, I'll wrap up. You probably all had enough. Days like Janmashtami are special opportunities to hear and chant about Krishna. Bhagavatam 10.237 says... Oh, they're waiting for me. Okay. Even while engaged in various activities, devotees whose minds are completely absorbed at your lotus feet, who constantly hear, chant, contemplate, and cause others to remember your transcendental names and forms, are always on the transcendental platform, and thus they can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The power of hearing, chanting, and remembering. Something we've all heard before, hundreds of times, and it's equally true for the 101st time. Hearing, chanting, remembering. That is our process, and it works. And it's what we do to understand our relationship with Krishna. So I am going to conclude with some nice verses from the Bhagavatam about Krishna's beauty. There are four Gitas in the 10th canto. Gita means song. Gitas are poetic expressions of Gopi's love. First, there's the Venu Gita in chapter 21 that glorifies Krishna's flute. There's the next is the Gopi Gita, when Krishna experiences separation from Krishna. The Yugala Gita comes along, chapter 35, which is gopis just singing about Krishna wandering the forest. Very beautiful. And then there's the Bhramara Gita, which is the bumblebee, when Radharani is speaking almost in madness to the bumblebee. That's the 47th chapter. Anyway, this is from chapter 35, the Yugala Gita. And this is the gopi speaking. O girls, this son of Nanda, who gives joy to the distressed, bears steady lightning on his chest and has a smile like a jeweled necklace. Now please hear something wonderful. When he vibrates his flute, Vraja's bulls, steers, and cows, standing in groups at a great distance, are all captivated by the sound. And they stop chewing the food in their mouths and cock their ears. Stunned, they appear as if asleep or like figures in a painting. My dear gopis, sometimes Mukunda imitates the appearance of a wrestler by decorating himself with leaves, peacocks, and feathers and colored minerals. Then in the company of Balaram and the coward boys, he plays his flute to call the cows. At that time, the rivers stop flowing, their waters stunned by the ecstasy they feel as they eagerly wait for the wind to bring them the dust of his lotus feet. But like us, the rivers are not very pious, and they merely wait with their arms trembling out of love. Krishna moves about the forest in the company of his friends, who vividly chant the glories of his magnificent deeds. He thus appears just like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, exhibiting his inexhaustible opulences. When the cows wander onto the mountainside, and Krishna calls out to them with the sound of his flute, the trees and the creepers in the forest respond, by becoming so luxuriant with fruits and flowers, they seem to be manifesting Lord Vishnu within their hearts. As their branches bend low with the weight, the filaments of their trees, of the trunks and vines stand erect out of ecstasy of love of God, and both the trees and the creepers pour down a rain of sweet sap. Maddened by the divine, honey-like aroma of the tulsi flowers on the garland Krishna wears, swarms of bees sing loudly for him, and the most beautiful of all persons thankfully acknowledges and claims their song by taking his flute to his lips and playing it. The charming flute-like song steals away the minds of the cranes, swans, and other lake-dwelling birds. Indeed, they approach Krishna close to their eyes, maintaining strict silence, worshiping him, by fixing their consciousness upon him in deep meditation. O goddesses of Raja, when Krishna is enjoying himself with Balaram on the mountain slopes, playfully wearing a flower garland on the top of his head, he engladdens all with the resonant vibrations of his flute, and thus he delights the entire world. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, all glories to Sri Krishna Janmashtami, all glories to Sri Radha Shyama Sundara.